Oh boy.
Oh boy. You guys start without me? That's rude. I took a shower for you and everything.
I told you how hard it is
to get like two people on here, this fucking app. And you know, it's free, but to get three people on here is hard.
Easy does it.
That's right. I did not know what the topic was because I hardly pay attention to my own life. Well, anyway, welcome to the new updated version of my podcast, the Steve Matthews Elevated Podcast.
Are you recording right now?
Yeah, I'm recording right now.
You bet your buttons.
I got tired of the old one, so I'm like, let me just like update this, put a new title on it, you know, all positive stuff like that.
Are you gonna cut all the crap music out?
No, I'm not gonna cut it.
You're gonna put the elevator music on in the background again?
I'm putting the flyest shit I can find on this. Platform.
Man, I want DJ control of this episode.
Funky fresh beats.
That's what you said last time.
I'll be laying tracks and you're gonna be like, wow, you blew my doors off.
We don't want the music to interfere with somebody hearing the message, you know?
No, you don't.
He's got the dump button ready for you, Jim. Don't worry.
I have no dump button.
You need one.
I can just like poke my dog in the nose. That's a dump button.
Man, it's good to be back on here with you, man. I can't believe it's been like 3 or 4 months since we recorded.
Way too long. And I put this out there a while ago, and I never thought like we could get it going because I wasn't sure if it was going to happen. And I wasn't sure with the app, how many people I could get on here. It says friends plural. So, you know, here we are.
Yeah.
That was a great meeting. This is really good to do right after we all get out of the meeting. We're all in the same meeting. We're all in different parts of the country. We're all in the same meetings. It's great.
Yeah.
It was a powerful meeting, man. That was a good message. And, you know, it was important to get across. I need to get across that, like, sometimes I need help. Like, even with all this stuff going on and all this community we have, it's like sometimes it's just like, it's too much, this pandemic bullshit, and the lockdown's coming again, and then you don't know what's going on for the holidays, and, you know, you don't want to kill your family members, because that's what's put out there, that fear, you know, and it sucks.
You know, it was pretty crazy. It was, I have a buddy that asked me if he can stay with me for a couple nights, because him and his girlfriend got in a big fight, you know, because they drink too much. And so it's ironic that he had just got here before that meeting started. Cause I was like, hey, I'm going to be on a Zoom meeting, but, you know, you're obviously, he's staying with me for a couple of days. So he showed up and he was sitting on my couch, probably about 15 feet away from me. And I have my laptop open and obviously the volume is playing and that topic was going. And, I just out of the corner of my eye, I could tell that he was obviously heard the meeting and he was looking over and he was like, he's been sober curious for a while. And so it was a pretty powerful experience to know that the meeting was going on, know that he was listening, even though he may have pretended like he wasn't, and to hear that it was kind of cool.
That is cool. I like that.
You know, it's always like I'm sure he knows or he wants to know what the other side of the fence is like. You know, it's always grass always green on the other side, but it really is true in the case of sobriety because your life sucks. You know, most people like don't get sober because they're having such a great time drinking, as this saying goes, you know. And it's like my buddy, he finally came around again, and I didn't talk to him for a while because he was just straight up dickhead. Like every time I talked to him, he was just a wise ass. And I'm like, dude, you know, I can't be hanging around people that just don't take anything seriously. And every couple of months I get like, oh, my life is falling apart, call or text, or maybe, you know, I hate hearing it, but I like knowing he's still alive. So like sometimes I'll reach out and see how he's doing. And now he's back for like a week. So I'm like, man, I don't know how you do it, because I really commend anyone that even tries to get sober at this point, like with this shit going on, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, you so often hear, and I agree with it, but you so often hear people say that, like, you know, this shit's not easy, like, sobriety's not a cakewalk, and it's not, and it's really not. But you know what? Either it's fucking life for normies that don't do this. So, you know, this is definitely the first time anybody's heard that, but every day is not easy. Yeah, that's true, but guess what? Every day is not easy for people that aren't in recovery from addiction. What it is it's your mindset and perspective, I think, is what it is. That has such a huge part of it. Your mindset and your perspective. Bad days are allowed. They're going to happen. Bad days, everybody's going to have a bad day, regardless of who you are. Whether you're a cocaine addict, whether you're a sex addict, whether you're, you know, a human trafficking addict, like whatever it is. And so, you know, people in recovery sometimes are like, every day is not a good day. This is bullshit. Don't believe every day is good in sobriety, because it's not. Guess what? It's not. But it's not for people that aren't in recovery as well. So,
yeah, that's why I love that, Jim. That's why one of the things I learned early on and I try to hang on to is, yeah, every day isn't easy. It's never guaranteed to be easy, but putting poison back into my body certainly won't make it any easier. I'm still going to have the same issues. I'm still going to have the same problems. I'm going to be hungover and regretful and remorseful, and all of those feelings come right back. So why go there?
Well, Easy Does It is more of a, I get it as more of a suggestion. Not that it definitely is not easy. There's nothing really easy about life, but also by the same token, like, you could say you don't have to make it hard. It's all how you look at stuff, because you're going to basically do the same thing on a daily basis anyway. You're going to get up, go to work. Something's going to happen bad, and something may happen good if you're lucky, you know. Just try and, like, take a step back and maybe say, like, for instance, today, you know, I can think of my resentments that I have against someone, and I can say, you know what, why do I keep judging someone? That's not how I was brought up, and that's not definitely not how I am supposed to be when I'm a sober person, you know. Like, I don't take, what am I doing taking other people's inventory? Sometimes the inside of my head is a complete shit show some days. Like, who am I to take somebody else's inventory? I got my own problems, you know. And when I kind of scale it down and I take a step back and I look at my situation, and I'm grateful for the things that I have in my life. Like, why do I have anger at all? But it's just like stresses of everyday life, you know. And so you got to try and take it easy, just like back off a little bit, you know. That's the way I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I look at Easy Does It as not trying to rush the process. That's what I was taught at the very beginning. I wanted what everyone else had when I was 5 minutes sober and I hadn't done any other work. Why would I expect that? But the Easy Does It part is taking it easy on me too, not beating myself up, especially in early sobriety, for when I went through the steps, going through, seeing all of my character defects written out. Instead of beating myself up over it, what can I do? And, you know, it's all mindset, and it's all how we look at things and perceive things. And it's so much easier to take someone else's inventory, because I'm not doing any of the internal work then. I don't have to analyze myself if I'm looking at everyone else, but I don't want that way, you know?
You know, that's what you have. I think that's what when I talk to people that are struggling, and, you know, they are early recovery, and they talk about others that, you know, judge them or say this, or, yo, you need to work the steps. You have to do this. You have to do that. I think anybody in recovery that's telling somebody how to work a program, they're just, you know, they're obviously not working that program too well themselves. So, you know, I've had that discussion a couple times with people, and it's like, if somebody's so worried about you and your program, then, you know, obviously their shortcomings are pretty out there themselves. Who are we to judge?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the whole character defect thing that we talk about over and over. You know, when you are projecting things onto other people, or look what they're doing, or any of that. I think it's always, and for me, I know that to keep that in the forefront of my mind when people are kind of spewing that stuff at me, that I need to remember that it's a reflection of something they're going through. And why do they feel that way? What are they dealing with? And it's not so much a reflection of what I really have going on. As long as I can stay in the moment and know who I am and really where I am, I can't take it all personally.
You know, I can be such a self-diagnosed mental, intellectual, overblown, overcomplex alcoholic that, like, there's no matter how good my life is going, I can always find time to take someone else's inventory and get the focus off me, and I just feel like crap. You know, like it's a simple program for complex people. You know, recovery, the whole fellowship. It really is, and like normal people don't always sit there and just take other people's inventory. There's actually people out there. I know them. I've talked to them. I've met them. That just live a nice, easy life and kind of worry about themselves. And why can't I be like that? You know, it sucks, but I have trouble doing that sometimes. And some days I'm great at it. You know, I'm still sober. I haven't drank today. But then sometimes I'm just like, why am I a miserable asshole? You know, like, why do I have to look at someone else and like pick some shit that they're doing wrong and I'm doing wrong? Basically what I'm doing looking at them.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of an active addiction. Like, you know, when you go, I would go into a new job or a new situation, you know, one thing they come and say is like, you know, you shouldn't try to change the situation. You need to look like do rehabs or church or whatnot. I would go into new jobs and I would try to find everything wrong with it and think I had all the answers. When I'm trying to find everything wrong with something else, I'm just not wanting to look at what's wrong with myself.
Yeah. Unless you are, you know, like I don't know if I've met anyone that they're that perfect that they can like say, I'm here to help you and I'm just going to put things out to you you do wrong.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Go ahead and tell me. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, I have a few minutes. Let me sit down. Please tell me your thoughts on how my life is going and how I can change.
Right. As you're living a shit show of a life yourself. Yeah. You know?
I'm not, but mentally I can. I can put myself in that. We probably have all of us. I know I do have. I have a great life. I'm sure both you have a substantially better life than you had when you were using. But I can take that life and just turn it on its side, you know, and just be miserable if I want to. And it's amazing how I can get there in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I think for me, and again, in early sobriety, I think that was really a struggle for me. All of a sudden, after so much chaos and discourse and craziness, all of a sudden life started to settle down and things started to fall into place. And I didn't know what to do without that chaos. And I didn't know what to do without the drama or that I created. I created all of that. It wasn't outside circumstances coming in. It was me making all of that. And so when I didn't know really what to do, it was kind of that fork in the road. How do I keep going and keep doing this recovery stuff when everything seems okay? I was waiting, constantly waiting for that shoe to drop. And then, you know, it's just like what you said, keep it simple. When you keep it simple, when I keep it simple, everything's okay. And it's okay to just have it all right for a little bit, you know?
I think that's hard for us, though. We're not simple people. We are never able to keep it simple. We complicated the shit out of everything, and we were the problem. Like, we were always, it's so funny when we talk about, you know, going to situations and having an exit strategy and then boundaries. When we were always a person that people needed an exit strategy and boundaries with and for, you know, I was never simple for forever. I was fucking a mess.
I look at my parents now and I'm like, you guys were such enablers. You know, like I don't want to tell them that, but I'm like, you guys must have just the shit that I put you through, the hoops that you had to jump through just to try and keep me happy when I was younger and I was just a miserable SOB. Oh man, wow. I could never deal with anyone like that now. Well, not only because I'm sober, but you know, forget it. If I was still active addiction, I'd blow a gasket within the first like week of trying to, you know, compensate and trying to deal with people like that. I have, like I said, I have trouble even talking to people I know that are still active, you know. Yeah. Because it just, you're just in a different spot, you know, like, and that's how it is. And that's, it's unfortunate, but those are also the people. Like, if you have friends or family that are still out there and are active, those are people that really hit your heart because you probably ran with these people or you grew up with these people, or you know, like a family member you know them through blood. You know, it's hard watching someone do what you did, knowing that they know that there's an answer. They just don't feel like going in that direction. And that's what I was going through for a while with my buddy. And then he came back into the fold. But there's so many people I know that just have died recently, just overdosed on like heroin and shit, because they said, fuck it, I'm done.
And right now they're getting bad shit, you know, because people, the money's low. And so, you know, the drug dealers, they're having a hard time. So the fucking stuff people are getting out there, especially with, you know, certain communities, the shit they're getting is bad. It's really bad.
Well, and I think too, Steve, what you were just saying, for me, when I see family members or friends or even people who keep coming in and out of the rooms, and I mean, I want to strangle them. I just want to say, like, what are you expecting to change when you just keep going down that rabbit hole? And then it's the whole, I'm reminded of the whole attraction rather than promotion. Okay, just keep doing living amends, keep showing them that life can be better. But it's hard. I think that's probably one of the biggest things I struggle with, especially in the last couple of months when we've been locked down, when people are reaching out for help. And I feel like I'm saying just what you just said about your buddy. I feel like I'm saying the same things to them over and over and over. And they're doing the same things over and over and over. And it's hard. It's hard to know what to do.
I laugh like internally sometimes when I hear the excuses, because they're the same excuses that I used to give. Oh, I'm okay. I'm cool. How's it going? You got like a one word answer or something like that. And it's like, you know, for just an example, I'm back living with my parents or whatever. I broke up or I left my wife or whatever, but I'm good. I'm good. No, you're not. You're not good. You're far from good. Who are you fooling? I know you. You know, it's like I was you. I still am you, but I'm just on the other side right now, you know? And your life is not good when you're losing things, family, you know, if you're back with your parents, these things happen. But if it's for reasons of like you're going through a divorce because you drank too much, or you couldn't stop smoking crack, or getting prostitutes in some sleazy hotel on some thoroughway in New Jersey, you know, like right around where I live, like yeah, it's like you're not doing well. You're full of shit. I know you're full of shit, and you know it too. And it's just like, you know, that's why I said you don't really hear from these people that much. They don't want to keep in contact with you.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the coolest things about being in recovery, is that we are able to see that perspective. And that's the empathy part of it. We can see it and say, look, you are not bullshitting me. I gave those excuses. I was the queen of those excuses. I know that you are full of shit right now. And when you're ready to get vulnerable and honest with yourself and have a conversation with me, I'll be here. But your life's not going to get better doing the same things over and over. And I don't know, it's an interesting time we're in.
It is. You just have to show them your bicep. And then
they'll
just be intimidated from the bicep, and they'll be like, oh my God, one day at a time. It's just that simple.
You know what I like to talk about is, like, you know, say what you were just saying, like, what was it for you that, you know, made you want to just switch from always having excuses to being the change you wanted to see? I think that's, I love hearing that from people. I've heard briefly from you a couple times, but, you know, it's easy. You know, we all know when we're talking to somebody in active addiction, and they're just making excuse, and it's fucking lies and bullshit. And we did the same thing, just an excuse. And it's never our fault. We're the victim. It's never our fault. But what was it? Where was it for you that made you flip that switch and stop being the victim and all of a sudden, you know, be that change?
When I ran out of excuses and I tried to kill myself, plain and simple, when I slipped my wrist, that's when I was like, there's no more excuses left. Like, I just stepped across that line that you never step across unless you want to change, you want to scare yourself into change, or you really want to die. So it's like, there's nothing left for me to do. I can't say, oh, well, I just had a bad day. You don't just have a bad day and try and off yourself, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, and that's shocking, but people got to hear it. Like, I got to the point where I'm like, fuck it. I'm done. I don't even care anymore. I don't have any excuses anymore. I'll just tell you, what do you want to hear? Which one do you want to hear today? You know, I'm full of shit. That's basically what's going to come out of my mouth anyway, you know? But that's, for me, that was what did it.
Do you like slowly progress to that?
I did, yeah. I slowly progressed to that. And through just self-loathing and not even wanting to wake up. I was mad at God for waking me up in the morning. Like, how dare you fucking son of a bitch wake me up again? That is severely damaged mental person, you know? That does that. You wake up and you're like, I didn't care if I lived anymore. And that was really scary. I let go. I just let go of everything. And I just went into that dark place. It's not even dark. It's just like a gray. Like, everything's just like one color put together. You know, there's nothing left. Like, you can look at my eyes and there's nothing behind them, you know. And that was for a while. That went on for a couple of years. I think 2 years, 27 to 29.
Wow.
Yeah. It was just, I was lost, completely oblivious to anything that was going on in the world. I got up, I don't know how I kept my job. I kept my job and, you know, like, I'm on probation. I freaking like overdosed I was in like a coma for like medically induced coma for 36 hours. And I was on like every substance known to man. I would go to New York City and just come home like in the afternoon, not sleep, nothing. Like, I don't even know how much shit I did. And I can remember crawling out of a Cadillac Escalade. I was in the middle. I got claustrophobic and I thought I was going to have a heart attack because all the stuff that was speeding through my system. You know, I took like 12 hits of X and a bottle of champagne, and I was drinking like a dozen vodka and Red Bulls that night. I was having a heart attack.
Oh, liquor.
Like, I didn't even know how my heart is still beating.
Cognac.
That malt in the 40s.
I think for me, Jim, that's a really good question. I think for me, honestly, it took sitting in a chair and hearing other people speak truth to me, and I didn't need to be coddled anymore. I didn't give me the truth. I needed to hear where I was, where I was going if I didn't change, and could I accept where I was. For me, I honestly think it was such a quick 8 month downward spiral that towards the end, I wasn't sure that I would wake up from. There were too many nights in a row where I would wake up completely covered in sweat, and I would only have a tank top on, and I was completely covered, and there were empty glasses next to me and one in my hand, and all I could think of was, okay, if I take a drink, it'll take the shakes off, I'll be fine. And my heart was beating so fast out of my chest. God only knows what was going on internally. But I think when I hit that proverbial wall and finally got my ass into a chair and heard people telling my story, and then hearing them say things to me afterwards like, you really don't ever have to feel this way again, but you have to do work or you are going to feel this way again. I think I needed that raw old-timer wisdom. I don't know. And that's where I feel like, you know, I'm nowhere close to an old timer, but I think for anyone who is new in the program, that's why I share my story so openly, because I needed to hear that when I first came in. I needed to hear the truth. I'm not sugarcoating anything for you. Like you said, we played the victim for so long. I'm not gonna allow someone else to play the victim if we're gonna work together through this. Deal with your stuff, work through it, and we'll keep growing together.
I just love hearing this because, like, for me, there was probably like 10,000 times it should have been that moment in my life where I'm just like, okay, you need to make this fucking change already. Like, I mean, how many times as I'm saying this, you know, you're probably thinking, you know, situations on yours. I mean, I was homeless. I remember waking up and I remember just partying and drinking on the rocks at the beach with other homeless people and just getting blacked out drunk. And, you know, I'd fall asleep. And when I fell asleep on the sand, I'd make sure, you know, I had a duffel bag and a backpack. That's where all my belongings were in. And I'd make sure as I got really blacked out, I knew I was going to pass out. So I would cover them up and like put my arms around them. So I would, you know, keep them close to me so somebody can rob them. But sure as shit, I wake up and somebody had cut the strap off a bag and was gone with it, or they unzipped it and they, you know, stole everything from me. And you know, that wasn't my rock bottom. It's like I've been through some of the worst fucking crazy shit that should have been that last moment for me, but it wasn't. And so, you know, I love hearing other people's sayings, like, where, you know, Jim, how the hell isn't that where you realized something was out of control and insane and you needed to make the change? So, you know, I still went on for a while after that. So I love hearing other people's story to you know, make me feel better about myself that I wasn't that nuts. But also, you know, for other people to hear it also, because people are going to listen to this podcast and they're going to, you know, relate to a lot of it. So I love, you know, what was it that made you stop being a fucking victim and making excuses and actually do it? And then why? Like, why then? Why that time? So I think that's a powerful thing.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, Jim, you know, I've shared this before, but I think you are absolutely right. I mean, our stories, yours and mine in particular, are really couldn't be further from each other. But that's one of my favorite parts of recovery, is that it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. We're here, the three of us here on a Tuesday night, all in different time zones, because recovery works for us, because we are doing the work in recovery. And I think for me, and I think I can speak for both of you on it too, because I see both of you doing it, the service part is critical. It's huge. And when I can get out of my own head for 10 minutes and help somebody and share that part of it, what, you know, I think I had to get off where I got off. And so did you, and so did you, Steve. I think that's just how it all works. Not everybody's bottom is the same, because we can all learn from each other. And not everybody's story is the same. Not everyone's recovery is the same. What works for you might not work for me. What works for me might not work for other women. But when we pick and take what works really well, we can figure out what works really well in recovery. I don't know. I think that it's such a powerful thing to be connected with people who want to live a better life.
Well, the overall theme of our disease is that we have a tremendous capacity for pain and misery, to the point where we almost revel in it. And everyone has a different bottom, or if you want to say breaking point. Every brain is geared that there's just some part of life that they're going to get to where it's like, all right, we're turning over. That's why everyone's bottom's different. There's like, I don't believe that it matters how much someone drank or how much drugs someone did. Once you get there, you got there. It doesn't matter who, you know, what you did. It doesn't matter how long you did it for. Mm-hmm. It's how did it make you feel? And we all felt this. There's one thing we can all agree on. We may have done different substances, drank different liquors, and we may have gone out and done it for more days. You may have drank more than I did. I may, you know, I didn't drink every single day, but I did stuff every day. But I maybe with my mix of cocktail and where it brought me and my depression was exactly the same spot that you got to and that Jim got to when we all said enough's enough. It's like that rock bottom, that absolute last one, because I thought that I was dragged across the bottom many times, just bouncing off, you know, pavement with my head. But once I got to that turning point, you know, that breaking point, I think we all pretty much have the same final thoughts. This is just not working anymore. It's got to change. It has to change, because I can't breathe. You know, it's suffocating.
Yeah. I remember in early recovery, I had friends from back in the Chicagoland area who would say to me, geez, how bad were you? Or how much did you actually drink? And I remember taking such offense to that at first because I didn't want to tell them the truth. But then I think what was really behind it for me was that exactly that answer. It was as bad as I needed it to get in order to want better. How bad did I have to be? I mean, in order to want a different life. I don't know.
Everyone's switches, I think, are set differently.
Well, and it, again, it's the underlying feelings. We're all... there's so many commonalities in recovery behind why we did what we did, whether it was childhood trauma, any kind of trauma, depression, anxiety, all of those things. And I think we can all feel all those things, like you just said, to the same extent at different levels. And that's okay. It doesn't make someone worse or better because they only did things for a certain period of time. Coming into recovery is one of the most courageous things I think anyone can do.
There's a lot of people out there, as you may know, that you look at and you're like, well, there's some people you say, well, they weren't as bad as me. And then there's some people that I hear, I'm like, holy shit, how the fuck did you make it this far? Like, and I thought I was bad. And then you realize everyone's got their own little, you know, everyone's got that cutoff point where you just gotta, for me, it was probably the worst thing I could think of. That's basically what I got in my brain. I'm like, if this doesn't work, then I'm really screwed because I can't get rid of myself. And I almost woke up with like a creepy laugh when I woke up and I'm just like covered in my own, you know, blood. And I woke up and I'm like, the ambulance is there. And I'm like, I don't believe it. I'm still fucking alive. And that was for me, that was that point. But it doesn't mean like I didn't have 1,000 opportunities where I could have just ended it and said, I want a different life, you know. I could have said that when I first got, you know, blitzed off of cocaine. I could have said, you know what, this isn't for me. But I kept going.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why we have a tremendous capacity for pain. I guarantee all three of us went far beyond what any kind of earthling would think is like a really fucked up situation. Like, for me, it was, you know, going out and dropping, you know, pills that I don't even know what they're made out of and staying up through the night. That's not normal. You know, for Jim, it might be something else. For you, it was something else. We passed normal eons ago, and yet we still put ourselves through that pain and turmoil because we thought that, like, if we changed our mood, our life was going to be like a miraculous different life, you know? And that's just not how it is. And we all get to the same point. At you know, some point in our life, we all get the same spot. It's just there's different pathways there. It's just like, it's kind of almost like religion. You know, we all believe that we can't cope with life anymore. It's just how we got there is different. And like Jim, and then you can turn around and do what like Jim did. He started a company, and he, you know, Valor Fitness, and he does the, you know, was it an article of clothing you give away for each article? It's purchased, and you know, I haven't gotten that gracious yet, but I try and do my donations. And say you always have those awesome videos on Instagram. It's like we all give back because we got so bad that we remember what it's like, and now it's like we're catapulted into that extra dimension where we can donate our time and our experience, strength, and hope, and help someone out. You know, like, it's just a wonderful place to be right now.
You know, it's amazing that I love myself and I'm happy and I don't need something in my body to make me that way. You know, that's one of the true joys. Like, I don't know if I would have been able to do a podcast with you guys in active addiction unless I had at least a couple cocktails and a couple shots in me. I wouldn't have been secure enough with myself. You know, that goes back to a lot of the mental health and childhood trauma that you talked about. Like, you have to get past those things and it's a lot of work. But getting to love yourself without having to put something inside you is the most freeing, amazing feeling like I've ever experienced. And it's like, you know, you say like, you know, giving back. I truly, honestly wish everybody could feel this. Like, you know, you see people that are hurting and you see people that are, you know, in such dire situations, and you want them to have that same joy you do. And I seriously, I wish everybody could love themselves without and be happy without having to, you know, thinking they had to put something, you know, in their body. You see, if you said, you know, having you would just, you know, snort or take or pop any pill, man, when I was in county a couple times I would find a pill and I'd be like, what is this? And my monkey would next to me would just be like, who cares what it is? Just smash it up and snort it, because they're so unhappy with themselves. They want to change their mindset and get out of their mind because they don't want to, you know, anything to take their mind off of them, which is, it's such a fucking horrible feeling. And to have the simple joy to be able to love yourself and be happy in your own skin without something, a substance inside you, is the most freeing, amazing feeling in the world. And I swear, I wish everybody could have it. And, you know, you talked earlier about, you know, when you're talking about sponsees and excuses, like when I talk to people that are fighting, you know, trying to get sober and they're not able to, and they're relapsing, and it's like, you know, I tell them, like, hey, do you have a kid? I often say this when I speak in front of big crowds, like, who has kids? Raise your hand. Everybody will raise their hands. I'm saying, okay, don't you wish your kids would just take your advice on, you know, the advice you give them, so you could save them from so much harm and so much horrible experiences while they're young? And everybody's like, yeah. I'm like, well, that's what us, these people like me and you that are on this side of the room speaking to people in active addiction, that's what we're trying to do to you. So in essence, take your own advice. Usually like a mic drop when I do that, because, you know, people are always like, yeah, man, I wish my kids would just listen to me because we could save them so much hurt and angst. And I'm like, well, that's what us that have a little bit of time under our belts are trying to do with you guys that are struggling and making excuses and going back and forth and back and forth with that relapse game. But yeah,
I've thought this
stunning, powerful, and baffling.
I've been proven right that you just stop growing when you start in active addiction, when you start off on that train. And you really are, like you said, like parents talking to their children. You could be a 50-year-old man or woman, and you are just the littlest narcissistic child on the inside when you're in active addiction. And it's just like parents talking to their children when you're on one side talking to the other side.
I just want to make note that
and you haven't cried
into this and started crying when he talked about service work. So I won his wager, so we're clear.
Did we?
Oh shit, that's $20, Jim. You owe. I didn't take the wager.
It was $50.
Okay, but I just want to say,
I said.
I just want to say though, when you get him talking about service work, I think that's why I was glad you asked them that. I'm like, yes, here we go, because I knew that would open.
I did not cry, mind you, by the way.
When you
can't,
oh, you would have heard it in my voice. I can't hide that.
Okay. I'm gonna trust the truth, because this is recorded.
Oh,
so
my God.
That's on your conscience. That's on your step
10. Oh my God. I haven't done the steps. I told you. I haven't done the steps, so I'm not worried about that. We've talked about this.
Anyway, what I was going to say is, though, I think it you cannot underestimate the power of giving back, whether it is exactly what you said, Steve, whether it's always your time, but whatever capacity you're giving that back in, whether it's sharing, you know, when sharing my story or meeting with another alcoholic or any of that. But that the most powerful experience, honestly, was serving with Jim in LA a couple of weeks ago. And to see the joy, the true joy in his face of giving back, I will never forget that. I will never forget that day. That experience was unreal. It really was. It was the most humbling experience I have ever been a part of. And that's because, just like you said, we have all, the three of us collectively, I believe, have gotten to a point where in early recovery, realizing that I didn't have to alter my mind with any chemical substance in order to be happy, in order to feel internal happiness, because that is where it's going to come from every single time. And when you can get to that point where you are able to actually give back, is unreal. It's there's not even, I can't even describe it.
And you want to do it right away too when you get sober, and it's so advised against, you know, giving back, except for like advice from what you've already learned. But that's why they have those, you know, steps. And some people go through them fast and some people go through them quick. But I tend to think that giving back should start right away, you know, but, you know, there is that, you know, first to 12 thing that they talk about where, you know, you were powerless over alcohol, and then right away you want to, you know, carry the message and spread the word, which is great. But, yeah, I mean, we are past the point, and we are through the steps, and we have things in proper order, and we've looked at ourselves, and, you know, hopefully all of us have made amends. I just made one the other day to someone that I wanted to for a while now, and it felt good. You know, it sucked because I don't like this person too much anymore, but I had to because I knew it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. You know? And isn't it amazing how today your brain and your heart, my heart, knows what the right thing to do is, even if I don't want to do it, but I'm capable of doing those things today.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, it's like what you said, Jim, about the excuses part. You didn't have to go do that, Steve. You could have held on to it. You could have, but what does that do to you internally? Let it fester more and build more of a resentment and more of everything. And that, for me, that turns into the isolation part. I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want to do anything. If I'm feeling squirrely, I am going to sit in my own stuff. That's how I was towards the end of active addiction. I don't want to live that way anymore.
It's no way to live. It's no way to live at all. I act like a child for so long, and that's why when we're in active addiction, we keep losing things because we're like children who forget what it feels like to actually be a human being. We haven't. It's almost like we have to relearn when we get sober what it's like to be a human being, because we're such assholes for so long, you know, and we just take and just leave things where they are. And we never, my buddy said to me the other day, he makes good money, and just as an example, he goes, I have nothing to show for it in life. He told me, you know, he's a year older than me. He's like, I have nothing to show for it in life. And I'm like, that's what I said to myself too. I said, I can't believe that I have a job for this long and I have shit in my name. I have shit to my name, you know? And it's just a testament to this program and how it works. If I have anything material that I ever wanted, I already have. I already have. I'm 42 years old. I have what I want. I'm not rich, but I'm comfortable and easy does it, I guess you could say.
Well, simple program.
I think that's the whole mindset.
Yep.
I think that's the whole mindset change though too. When I tried to fill that void with things and substances for so long, being able to work through that why for me, you know, I always try to just speak for myself, but when I worked through that why, I realized that the stuff around me or the stuff I was trying to get and hold on to isn't worth it. You know, these relationships, I mean, you two, I would not have met you two 5 years ago or ever. I wouldn't have met anyone in our sober community. And what, I can't even imagine how much I would be missing out on.
I'd be missing out on some quality friends, that's for sure. Because a lot of times, the people you meet now, that they don't have to pay attention to how bad they treat people. Because a lot of times, some people either don't give a shit, they don't feel like they have a problem. You know, someone said to me, they don't have this program. They don't have a program of living. Someone said that to me about someone earthling, I guess you could say, a natural person, someone who's not addicted. And I'm just like, I couldn't imagine it, because I would just take it in the other direction and just be a complete utter asshole, because, you know, I can never go back to the way I was, so I'd probably even be worse, you know.
Yeah, and the relationships I have in recovery, you know, in the sober community and in person, far outweigh any relationship I've had in my life other than relationships with my sisters. They really do, because we are talking about raw, really tough stuff, you know. Yeah. And I know I'm joking about you crying, but that's one of your best qualities, is that you have no qualms about holding it in. No, you speak from your heart, truly and genuinely. And there aren't people like that who I dealt with.
You know why? It's because I'm just
go to a group.
I'm not afraid to show vulnerability. I think vulnerability is probably the strongest, one of the best things I've gained in recovery. To be able to be vulnerable enough to know that somebody can use something against you and try to bring you down and make fun of you, but you're okay with that. And you know that, you know, for instance, in, you know, a relationship, I'm just throwing this out there. You know, so many people are guarded and they don't want to let their guard down and open up to somebody because they don't want that person to hurt them. But when you allow yourself to be vulnerable and you know that if you do get hurt, which is a strong possibility, it's going to suck for a little bit, but you're going to be okay and you're going to bounce back and you're going to be fine. To have the confidence within yourself, and that's about loving yourself. And it's like, it gets more and more the more you do it. Recovery is practice. You know, I wasn't like that at first. When I first got sober, I still had my walls up to an extent, but just through, you know, working the program and practicing like everything, you get better at it. You know, I just all of a sudden, I'm like, I'm not afraid. If I start crying in front of a stranger and they want to use that against me, then that's on them, not on me. You know, that's them, you know, that has nothing to do with me. That just makes me, you know, inside I'm more genuinely happy and I'm okay with it. Like, you know, shame on you, not shame on me. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. You know, but it's such a freeing feeling, you know, to allow yourself to be vulnerable. It might suck and you might hurt, but to know that you're going to be okay and you're going to bounce back from it, and you've put in the work to make it like that. It's, I mean, I wish everybody could feel it.
Well, and I think too, Jim, like even knowing you how I do, I think a big part of that is that you share your story, and we all try to share our story, but you as an example, share your story from such a place of humility, and it's not boasting about where you are now compared to where you were, but it's saying, look, here's where I've been, here's the shit that I went through, and if you're going through something similar, you can do this too. And I think that is the part that other people need to hear, that just because you're stuck in a really tough place doesn't mean you have to stay there. And when you open that door and you're vulnerable with people who are dealing with other things too, it doesn't feel vulnerable. It doesn't feel like you're being vulnerable. It feels like you're just being you and honest. And that is something that this, honestly, probably the greatest gift I've gotten from this program, is that I don't have to lie to people in recovery about how I'm feeling. I'm feeling shitty today. Why? What's going on? You want to talk about it? I rarely ever say, no, I don't, because I know that I have to get it out.
You know, it's good. You know, you want a small exercise on reassuring how strong that you are now in recovery? Go up to anybody. I'll give you five people. Go up, call five people you know real well, or people you work with, or, you know, people you're friends with, and ask each one of them to write down their biggest fears, who has hurt them, and who they have hurt, and what role they played in it, and tell them to write it down and tell you about it the next day. You'll never get one person that's not in active recovery. Active recovery people, sure. Okay. That's vulnerability. That's the vulnerability you talk about.
Yeah.
It's fears and what makes you angry, what makes you fearful, and what have you done wrong to people? Not what have people, what did somebody do wrong to you? Okay, what was your part in it? How many people are going to say, well, honestly, all right, I was kind of fucked up at this one point, you know, and maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
No one says that. No one says that. If I walked into a bunch of guys at work while we're taking a telephone pole out of the ground, I'm like, hey, you know, you got divorced. What was your part in it? You know, that I would get, you know, told off.
Right.
You know, there's nothing, there's no honesty, there's no vulnerability and out in reality, because everyone's so guarded. Everyone's such a scared child on the inside. And the growth really comes from taking a look at yourself. And unfortunately, we have to beat ourselves up to look at ourselves. You know, we have to, like, get to the point where we need to look at ourselves in order to like...
That's no way to live. Yeah. That's, you know, horrible. Yeah, like, for sure. You know, life's meant to be... There's so much out there. And when you're so worried about, you know, what others will think about you or doing the wrong thing, like, you're not really living it. Like, are you really living it? Fuck no.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I had someone send me a message on Instagram or something recently, who I've known for 25 years from my little small hometown. And they said, oh, I saw one of your videos. Aren't you, like, so embarrassed that you share that stuff? And I knew the place that it was coming from. And right away, my first reaction was, oh my gosh, should I be? And then it, like, hit me. And I thought, what do I have to be embarrassed about doing the work? I was never embarrassed, truly. I remember pulling over to the side of the road with friends in their car, climbing out over them, throwing up. And my pants were soaking wet, and they left me there. And I did it over and over. Why in the hell would I ever be ashamed right now to share any part of my recovery? And again, Jim, it's like what you just said. That's such a reflection of where other people are. And it's just my choice. It's my place. What am I going to do with that? Am I going to judge them for being an asshole about it? Or am I going to give them a little bit of grace and say, you know what? They're not living the same kind of life I am. What? I can't change that.
You know, when people are honest, like, I am like the two you are, when you realize we have nothing left to lose because we've lost everything already and we've gotten some of it back, but we know what it means. We know the value on it and we know what it takes to keep that stuff. And when you talk to someone that's honest like that, that it's almost like you could tell they've went through something in life to make them like that. Like, you've went through hell, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
You say it in your head. Like, I say it in my head when I talk to someone before I know what their backstory is. I can tell, like, if they're real honest and they tell me how they feel and you can feel the emotion in what they say, it's like, wow, powerful. But you know, you've been through some shit, haven't you? I could say it, you know, with my eyes without even saying it with my mouth. And you can tell right away when people have been through some stuff. And it's comforting to know that someone's been through a battle that maybe they waged against their own mind and they won.
Yeah. When you were sharing just now, Steve, about that example and asking people, my first thought on it was, it's so interesting to me today when someone in recovery will send me a text or call or anything and say, hey, how you doing? How are you? How's your day going? I mean, if someone asks me that at work, I'm good. How are you? That's it. But for me, what I've learned is that these relationships require more depth out of me. They require me to share because we are sharing in this commonality. And we're going to grow together when I don't give you the BS answer of, I'm good, how are you? I'm not good. I'm exhausted. I worked 21 of 25 hours. I could sleep for another day. But I'll be okay because I'm not drinking. There isn't a thing right now that a drink would ever make better in my life. It'll only make it worse. And I can have those conversations and not feel judged, not feel like they're going to turn on... Jim, when you give that example about vulnerability, I probably think about that once a day when I share with people, because when I share that stuff, I don't walk away from that conversation thinking, oh my God, they're going to go tell everybody. They're going to tell someone that I had a really bad day. I don't know what to do. Bad days happen. How I react to those is what is so different today.
Well, that's part of that self-centeredness that we used to have, right? Because we thought that everyone talked about us, and we thought that people were going to take our little tidbits of our horrible life and all the information we gave them and go tell the world, you know? And it's like, are you kidding me? How important do you think you are?
Right.
Like, your life is a disaster. You know, my life was a disaster.
We thought everybody cared about us. We thought everybody knew about everything that we did. And little did we knew, nobody gave a fuck. Nobody cared. But we thought, man, the way our minds work, exactly. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Steve, you said something earlier. You were talking about how you stopped maturing. I think you said something like that. You know, what I heard in early recovery often is you mentally stop maturing once your addiction full goes, like, you know, really, really kicks in. For me, that was early 20s. So when I first started getting sober, when I was like 39, 40, I was like, sweet, I'm still 25. But you know what's funny about that is mentally, you know, mentally I'm okay with it now, but mentally, you know, I still am a young mid 20s, like young guy. It's so weird. My body's 44 as fuck, and I ache in different spots all the time. But mentally, you know, I think I am a lot less mature than so many people. You know, they often say that, you know, women mature faster than men, and you know, a woman is always 2 years more mature than a guy the same age. You know, I say us in our active addiction, man, I knew this. When I was like in my mid 20s, my friends that I knew weren't addicts or alcoholics. You know, they were normies. I knew guys, my guy friends that were the same exact age as me. I knew they were way more mature than I was. I could just tell. And I remember thinking that to myself, like, damn, like I'm a couple years behind these guys mature wise. And it's because, like, literally when your active addiction takes over, you mentally stop growing and you don't realize it. But I realized that in recovery, and I was like, fuck. But then I was also like, shit, I'm still like 25 mentally. But oh man. Yeah, but every part of my body hurts when I wake up. But damn it, I'm 25, but I can't do anything I did, but damn it.
That's why God made a leave.
Right? In the gray hairs or the lack of hair.
Hey, I'm overcompensating. Right?
Let's go buy a motorcycle.
Yeah. Let's go. Yeah, we'll buy a vet.
No.
We'll go buy a vet.
Neither one of you. That's not a good idea. I'm here to be that mature voice of reason.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, it's almost the end of the hour here, and I've had a great experience, as I always do, talking to my dear friends, and I really appreciate you guys coming on. I'm going to put this episode up as soon as possible. Is there anything in closing you guys want to say, like anything new? Or is there any advice you have out there
for
anyone trying to get sober?
I think my advice for anyone trying right now remains the same as when I first came into the rooms about 2,062 days ago. And what I heard was, if not today, then when? And if my someday isn't today, is it ever going to happen? And for me, there is always going to be something going on. Sure, a pandemic is clearly way out there, but there will always be something, an excuse. We've talked about that. I had to want better, and help is out there. The three of us are out here. I know that. I get messages every day from people asking for help. So just reach out. Someone will help you.
That's awesome.
You know, right? Why was you gonna follow like a freaking amazing person? You know, I challenge people. You know, you say one day at a time, and it's so cliche, and I hate it, and everybody hates it. But you know, I just do it for a week. You know, there's that app, there's that IG page out there, 1,000 hours dry, and you know, for people that are sober curious, you know, do it for a week and just see how much better things get. You know, it's tough when you're in full blown addiction. Trust me, I never would listen to that. And you know, you can't tell somebody like, hey, you got to be bigger than your excuses, and you need to stop playing the bang game, because you know, obviously they're so far deep into that. But you know, I know when I was in my worst part of my addiction, I would silently be on social media and I would look at people that had what I wanted, and I would just wish I had it, and I didn't know why I couldn't do it. And it pissed me off, but it also fueled me. And, you know, just baby steps. You know, that's all you can do. Baby steps. If you're still making excuses, just try it for 2 days. Try it for a week. You can do that.
Mm-hmm. You said some social media. I completely forgot. You can find me at Sober Life 78 and Saya. What's your handle again?
It's just S.Nelson42.
And Jim?
Neither Jim or I have hip, cool, sober ones.
I need to reevaluate my IG.
I came out with that.
Mine's just JHER76. Really original.
See my, yeah, I got the same thing. I got the birth date and I got the sober, and I'm like, let's put something in there that it's a long. Oh, life. That'll work.
You both have a great guys. Night. Thank you so much.
I'll talk to you later.
Thanks
for coming on. All right.